Getting to tour the world by playing music is an experience that one does not and should not pass up. You get to see the world from a variety of vantage points few peek through. You amass experience at an accelerated pace, and you get exposed to a myriad of cultures, flavors, personalities, delicacies, traditions, institutions, and music you would have never found had you decided to stay in one spot. I have never looked back since our band started its engines, and I have never regretted the decision to become a professional nomad. But after 20 years of wandering with guitar in hand, however, I can see the toll of the trade. Toronto is the city I was born and raised in. I have loved this city with all that I've had. As our adventures and journeys took us further and further from Toronto, it made me love my hometown even more when I'd return. But my time away, often longer than time spent at home, has taken a personal toll on me. The streets that accompanied me while growing up have slowly transformed. Landmarks that gave me comfort by their seemingly impervious presence have now been whisked away in favor of the creeping city's love for gentrified condominiums. And most importantly, friends that I held dear have either quietly moved away or distanced themselves due to the protracted time apart. These days, my time spent in my own city is hermetic and far from its center. Because of this, in some respects, I've lost touch with Toronto's spirit. Converse to this are the many friendships that I've formed while out on the road. I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but relationships originating on the road have a potency that hometown connections will never have. Maybe it's because the vulnerability of being so far from the safety of home makes people cling tighter to one another. Whatever the case, friendships made on the road endure. And I notice we always pick up seamlessly where we last left off, like we saw each other a few weeks ago, when it was more like 5 years ago. I met Donald Tardy, drummer and co-founder of the legendary Obituary, 13 and a half years ago, when he was drumming in Andrew WK's band for the I Get Wet tour. And we were both co-headlining across Canada together. I remember Donald being so cool to us, along with the rest of the band, and it was a good time had by all. But what I walked away with after the tour was over was my friendship with Donald that continues today. When the tour pulled into the Docks nightclub on the Toronto stop, I went home and grabbed my copy of Slowly We Rot for Donald to sign. I'll always relish what he wrote on the gruesome cover, appropriate to the illustrated scene. Danko, brothers through music, friends for life, till death, Donald Tardy. How cool is that? If my record collection was on fire, I'd definitely run back in to grab that album. In case you've lived under a rock for the past 25 years or so, Obituary from Tampa, Florida, are one of the greatest death metal bands that have ever existed. I say that with confidence, knowing few would ever dare dispute it. They are cited as one of the pioneering bands in the death metal genre, along with other Floridian acts like Death, Morbid Angel, and Deicide. A lot of so-called music pundits, people who write, or rather rewrite, music history, while focusing on Nirvana's seismic shift in the early 90s, always overlook an equal displacement within the metallic world, when bands like Napalm Death, Carcass, and Obituary ascended the throne and were crowned the new kings of the genre after the vacancy left by thrash. This past November, we played Speedfest in Eindhoven, Holland, an event curated by Eindhoven's punk rock masters, Peter Pan Speedrock, a band that I love and a band we've played with many times over the years. Their Speedfest has slowly grown into the premier heavy rock shindig in all of Europe. Only under Peter Pan Speedrock's supervision can they call lineups like this year, consisting of The Dictators, The Backyard Babies, Carcass, Judah, Mondo Generator, Refused, High on Fire, Voivod, and, of course, Obituary, to name a few. Originally set to headline was Eagles of Death Metal, but we all know after the Paris attacks, the Eagles had to bow out, unable to fulfill their headline slot of Speedfest. Everyone understood why, but the rocking carried on. When I knew Donald Tardy would be in my midst for a whole day, I could not let it pass without wrangling him onto our tour bus and recording our conversation for podcast posterity. Afterwards, Donald and company hit the stage and basically crushed Speedfest. In our camp, it was pretty much unanimous to all that watched that Obituary had the best set at Speedfest. When I got home from the tour, I started to notice news about the first annual Florida Death Fest, with Obituary, Corrosion of Conformity, Deicide, Madball, Trouble, Atheist, and others on January 30th of this year at the Cuban Club in Tampa, Florida, with Donald and John Tardy as organizers. I had to call Donald up and talk about it via Skype. So this podcast, much like episode number 42 with Duff McKagan and Damian Abraham, was recorded at two different times and mashed together as one. Thanks to Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones for supporting the podcast. Thanks to Chino Loco's Restaurants for making fish burritos stuffed with chow mein noodles. And thank you for listening. And to those of you who have left a rating or review on iTunes or SoundCloud, thank you very much as well. Subscribing to this podcast is absolutely free. I upload these episodes every 2 weeks, so it won't bung up your feed on your iTunes or anything. Anyway, here's my friend, Donald Tardy, from Obituary, on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. And long live Motorhead. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. They play the Guinness, Danko's go out down low for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Tear me in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Down. Danko Jones has a podcast. It's called the Danko Jones Podcast. La da 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 da. La da 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 da. Danko loves Mexican food. When we go out, he'll always turn to me and say, "It's taco time, Jerry." We order everything on the menu. Burritos, empanadas, carne asada flautas, enchiladas with mole sauce, chalupas, menudo, agua de horchata, moronga, torta de milanesa, queso flameado, torta de huevo, torta de jamón, and a tall glass of water. It's delicious, and the company isn't too bad either.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready, because the Danko Jones Podcast starts! No, no, no!
Donald Tardy's here at the back of our bus at Speedfest, and Donald, it's awesome to have you here, finally.
Yeah, thank you very much. Very excited to be a part of Speedfest and perform today, and get to witness you on stage later on.
Yeah, we missed each other this past summer at Wacken. I was actually looking on the side. I usually don't look because it nerves me out, but I was like, Donald's got to be here somewhere, and then I got your text.
Yeah, and instead I was actually in the lobby, and we got that sad reality that shuttles are only coming here, Danko's about to start. But we were able to stream it live, and I was sitting there watching you on my iPhone going, I wish I was there.
And then we had to leave, So we missed your set because you guys went on real late.
Oh, yeah, that was another great wake-up call for Obituary is we were the last band on the last little tent the last day of the festival. So that was we slam-packed the tent, so it was cool. But still, it was a long weekend, I can imagine, for fans, full of mud. You know, it was Mudfest this year.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, we recorded that our set for a DVD release. And when the cameras pan out, you could see kind of pockets of people. And so I had to do the, the commentary for the DVD. Yeah. So I kept saying, that's supposed to be filled with people. There is mud. It wasn't a thin crowd. It sucked that we couldn't meet up in Wacken. But here we are. It's Speedfest. And you guys are currently on tour with Carcass, Napalm Death, and Voivod.
Yeah.
And Speedfest just took the whole tour under its wing, which is really cool.
Very cool. And these fans are lucky to for that package. I mean, we're fortunate to be a part of such a cool tour that Carcass came to us and asked, and we were like, "Psh, are you kidding? That's a no-brainer. Don't ask again." Jeff Walker asked, and immediately we were like, "Absolutely."
So, is it Carcass's tour?
It is. It is Carcass playing last, but as Jeff Walker says, most nights on stage, you bastards, Obituary should be playing last.
Yeah.
Foyfot should be playing last. Napalm should play last. It's, you know what? For those four bands, any of them could be headlining, and they do on their own tour. So we're just, again, we somehow came together and made a dream lineup, and it really has been cool. The band members, just everyone's getting along. Even though now it's already 25 or 26 shows into it, we still have 9 more to go. Long tour, but everybody is super cool. They're veterans, and it's a great tour.
Yeah, there's something to be said for going out with like seasoned bands. You don't have to go through. You know, we take out a lot of young bands, and sometimes there's, you know, I won't mention names, but there's always an incident that shows just how green they are.
Yeah.
And they just gotta, like, learn how to, like,
that's right.
You know, deal with the headlining band or the other bands. Yeah. It has nothing to do with rock star bullshit. It just has to do with respect.
That's
and,
right.
You know,
and living conditions, because it's not about how much fun it is on stage or how much fun it is to watch them for their 45 minutes on stage. It is when you're living together and in the hallways of backstage rooms and in, you know, in bathrooms when you shouldn't be, when it's time for someone to get to go dump one down quickly before show, and someone's in the bathroom still flossing their teeth, you know, and you're just like, I told you yesterday, man, you gotta just prepare, let us use the bathroom for that. Yeah, and living on the bus, you know, same thing, you know. Yeah. So it is, it's a wonderful thing. It's us, Napalm, and Voivod sharing a bus, which at first we were like, holy moly, this is gonna be crazy, and instead it was like, holy moly, it's like so cool. It's amazing, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, we crammed on there like cattle, but we're having a blast because, again, everyone's cool, man.
You're sharing crew and all that stuff?
Yeah, we are. We, you know, everyone brought a little piece of what they needed, you know, usually like sound guy, stage guy. But, you know, it's very minimal. I think these bands are, they're everyone's self-sufficient and pretty minimal with the crew, and everyone helps out. The crews all help each other out with the load-ins and load-outs, so working well.
I can imagine that that tour is, like, slammed with people. Like, it's packed every night. That's probably the best metal tour right now.
It is, and you know, capacity crowds, sellouts, and people coming out of the woodwork. I mean, I think it's one of those things where even the old schoolers that are just bitter and old and maybe broke, they still, there was no question. Pre-sale tickets are ridiculous, and you can tell, you can see it with the fans. They love it. They, at the end of it, you can read the posts afterwards. People are like, I can't believe it happened. I can't believe it's happening tomorrow. I'm going for sure. Or, oh my God, it sold out. Now I just, you know, I want to go to the next town that you guys are going to be at. So that's great, man. It's what a feeling to know that you know, fans are coming out of every corner to come see us.
Well, Inked in Blood is a great return for Obituary to come out, like, just come out of the gate. It's an amazing album. I mean, I even said it on social media. I posted the album cover when it came out, and but you guys had a really unique way of putting this album out, even though it is. I'm confused. It's under the Relapse banner, but there's a big but, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we were a free agency. We were not a part of a record label. We didn't even look for a record label. We were writing songs for 4 years. We own the studio. We've done the last 2 albums on our own, which is a blessing. And this time I stood and got behind the board and engineered it because you know, we've been tinkering for 3 and 4 years on the Pro Tools rig. So we did. We actually just said, you know what? Let's go for it. Let's just start recording it and let's see what happens. And the Kickstarter campaign was an idea just to raise money to actually fund us while we're doing the record. And then the record label started coming to us, and we just, you know, we had open ears to everybody. And Relapse was the one that just kind of came in and said, let's just do a licensing deal. Let us put it out there everywhere can,
okay.
and give us 2 years to sell it, and then Obituary just gets the rights back, and we kept our publishing rights, and it's the first time we actually felt confident as a band that we own it. And that's if people know Obituary, we just like a lot of early Roadrunner bands, we signed the worst contracts literally on the planet, and so it felt good to just know that, you know what, we have a part of this thing, and proud to say, you know what, we recorded it, we did everything. We produced it ourselves, And it might not be the most proper recording, but it sounds metal.
It sounds heavy as fuck. I mean, it sounds... I don't have an ear for... I you know, hang out with engineers, and they're like, can you hear that? Can you hear that? That's off. I'm like, what? It sounds fucking great. Yeah. So I can't hear anything.
Yeah, and, you know, I was the last person to probably be in charge of... I should not have been, but we went for it. You know, we went for it. We knew it was going to be old school recording. There's not sound replacements. It's just a drum kit in a room, and you hear it. And we went for it.
But you've been doing that since Executioner's Return, haven't you? Or That's was right. it even before?
No, the Executioner's Return and the Darkest Day album, we recorded ourselves. We had our engineer, Mark Prater, in Tampa to come and make sure, to kind of babysit us and make sure that you're not doing something wrong with the Pro Tools system. But this time we took the reins on our own and just kind of went for it. You know, and again, like I said, it might not be the most proper recording. You hear phase issues. I do. When it was pointed out to me by an engineer, he's like, do you hear that? I'm like, what? He's like, just listen to Tom's. I'm like, oh, yeah, I do. I didn't recognize. Thanks for pointing that out afterwards. But proud, you know, we're proud that we did it ourselves.
I don't think hard rock and heavy metal should be perfect. Yeah. That's just my thing. In the age of Pro Tools and all these kind of gadgets, I like it to be well played, but like this perfect thing, sometimes when I hear bands that are perfect,
yeah,
it just turns me off.
No, I agree, especially as a drummer that prides himself on, you can take a handful of microphones and throw them in the room and let them land anywhere, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to get a good recording because I'm confident behind the drum kit, especially and only with Obituary songs, that is my stuff, and I know that we'll get a good recording. So with the Pro Tools rig and a little bit of knowledge over the years of, you know, proper mic placements and stuff, it did come out like kind of old school and real. You know, you can tell there's not sound replacing going on because it sounds a little bit too dirty to be sound replaced, you know, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, hanging out with obviously engineers and producers, you know, on downtime during a production, you know, I've been pointed out all the mistakes John Bonham made on Zeppelin albums.
That's
you
right.
know, so
and on the other hand, you could, again, John Bonham, you could just throw microphones in that room and he just gets that sound, and you saw it on the recordings that Led Zeppelin has. He's just phenomenal drummer, and it could be one microphone in the room and he's still going to get a good a mix. You're going to hear everything he does because he plays well.
Yeah.
And that's what I base myself upon is a John Bonham or a Vinny Appice, that I'm by far not the best drummer on the planet, and there's dudes that run circles around me that I actually freak out and love watching, but I know that I'm solid, and that's I'm cool with that, you know.
Yeah. So. What's the state of Tardy Brothers project? What's all that?
I got probably half an album that I'm still working on right now, probably five or six songs, and we're just so busy right now with Obituary that I'm excited about some of the riffs that I got going on. My brother's got ideas, and that's just a project that we're having a blast doing, that we're not in a hurry. So we're just going to wait and make sure we have a full, a real release before we even make a word about it. And again, it's a project that we're having a blast with, but Obituary obviously is super busy, which is a wonderful thing, and that's priority, and we're staying busy. But Tardy Brothers will be something. There's recordings. Actually, I'm super stoked on some of these songs we got.
Oh, awesome. But Inked in Blood is like, it's about a year old, am I right? So is the cycle of that album coming to a close? Or
I don't know, man. We're old dudes.
Really?
You know, we're not the guys to put out an album every other year. You know,
right.
It was 5 years since the last one, Inked in Blood. So we already have songs that were already in our back pockets and a lot of killer riffs. But again, you know, that this is, it's a big planet to get to every corner, and with Inked in Blood, we want to make sure we go everywhere and tour our asses off, man. I think fans deserve it. We love doing it. You know, we have Ken and Terry in the band now, and it's such a tight knit right now. We're having more fun than we've ever had, and touring's a big part of it. It's Obituary is we are decent on albums, but we are we're pretty damn good live, and we enjoy it so much that we're gonna push hard and get to every corner of this globe that we can.
Did you say Ken?
Ken, yeah.
He's in Obituary now?
Yeah, Ken. Yeah, Ken.
Where is he today? I haven't seen him.
He's here.
Oh man, I gotta say hi to him.
Yeah, Ken's here. We begged him. He was very busy as a guitar tech. You know, he was when you first met him probably, or when he played guitar with me with Andrew WK. Mm-hmm. And I told him back then, I said, just be prepared. I'm going to ask you to be a part of Obituary. But then he got super busy teching for a lot of...
Andrew?
He and I left Andrew pretty much at the same time. But then he started getting... He got real busy with Trivium. He then was a guitar tech for an American band, Matchbox 20. So he stayed extremely busy. Yeah, and they actually put him on a retainer contract to where he had to just be on call with them for a year. And that's right when I asked him. He's like, oh, man. He's like, I said, dude, that's only 1 year. I'm talking about from here on out, brother. This is, you know, here we go. And sure enough, man, he called me later and he's like, dude, if you're serious about that, he's like, I'm in. I'm really? So in. And so he came and he helped us and he recorded the album with us. Those are
that's
his
fucking awesome.
Solos on the record. He actually played his rhythm part too as well with Trevor's sound. So yeah, with Ken and Terry Butler, you know, we brought in the monster of all monsters, you know, the man who's been around metal longer than most of us. And with those two dudes, it was the final pieces to the puzzle, and you can see it. You can see it in how we are on stage, and just the happiness coming out of. I can see it. The happiness coming out of the bodies of this band right now. We're organized, we're super happy, and we're best friends, and we're having a blast.
Well, that's hard to get.
Yeah.
As a band, whether people know it or not.
Yeah.
But once if you can get it, you got to hold on to that.
Yeah. And with Terry, you know, we've known Terry for 30 years. That's what, he's been a Tampa dude. Me and Trevor actually went to school with his sister. He's a couple years older than we were, but we were actually in, you know, Trevor's first home. I remember him saying, first time he made it to Tampa and went to school, it was Amy Butler. And that's when we know, but you know, Terry was a part of Massacre and, of course, with Death. And so we've known Terry forever. So that was an easy decision when it was time for a bass player, and we wondered why 30 years ago he wasn't a part of the band. Mm-hmm. And of course it's because he was busy with Death and we were busy as a young band, but the good thing is we're finally, you know, we are a niche right now and good friends and kicking ass.
Well, I just remember when Obituary came through town on Executioner's Return, and Ken played in the band that night,
yeah,
because a couple of the dudes couldn't get over the border. So I remember last time I saw him, he was real stoked. He was like, I'm going to play tonight. And now I see him again and he's in the band. That's amazing.
Right. He was. He teched for us for a little while. He actually played bass guitar on stage a few nights because of just whatever was, it's years ago, I forget, but it's super cool. I mean, you can't ask for a nicer guy. Him and Butler both. They're both just good mood guys. They're just always in a good mood. They're positive no matter what happens. You can't get a smile off of Ken's face on stage. He's so stoked. And that means a lot, man. And that puts band members in the right frame of mind when you get ready to hit the stage. Because, as you know, when you pull up to some festivals or some shows, we know it's not all glam and glory. And, in fact, sometimes it's way worse than that. It's usually manic. You don't get what you want, but you don't get what you need when it comes to just proper getting able to eat before the show, or you're missing this, or you can't even figure out where this is. But then you got to somehow go out there and kill it, and you're expected to put on a performance that people are going to remember for the rest of their lives. And with Ken and Terry, they're always ready. And Ken gets so excited just about being in a band finally that he's proud of and ready to kick ass at. It feeds on it. We feed on that, and we've been having some really kick-ass performances because of good mood dudes.
Yeah, he was always, when we did the Andrew WK tour together, he was always a cool guy to hang with and stuff. And yeah, that was, I mean, it was our tour with you guys in 02 was really weird because Andrew should have been headlining at that point, and so you guys were just kicking our ass every night. It was a crazy tour to be on. Yeah. If you remember that.
I totally remember it. That's, you know, that on the contrary, I'm glad that you were playing after us because it gave me a chance to actually finish and actually crack a beer and say, oh my god, I get to watch this again.
Oh,
man.
That's awesome. No, thanks, man.
But yeah, that was a fun experience, man. It was all across Canada.
Yeah.
Most cities I've ever even dreamed of seeing across Canada, and that was a cool experience for myself. And hopefully, you know, hopefully we get to perform, you and I, on stage together like we are about to today. We get to be in events because we don't see each other that much, man.
No.
And it's always good. And like you said, last time it was whack and I was so excited months before. And then the reality of sitting in a lobby of a hotel and having to watch you on a 2-inch screen, you know, was a bummer. But I'm excited about today.
No, I'm really happy. The Speed Fest always the lineups are always stellar. Every year, I don't know how the guys in Peter Pan Speed Rock do it, but they manage to get like really cool lineups. Every year it's different. We've played it. We played it in 2012. And even back then, it was an amazing, nice. Amazing lineup. So when we heard you guys were on, I was like, Obituary's on? The whole tour is on? Like, that's amazing. Is Bill Steer in Carcass on this tour?
Oh, okay. Oh, and it's unbelievable. Just to see. And, you know, Carcass, it's funny because Carcass has the two new, like, Young Bucks as well to add that piece to the puzzle. And you could tell they're great. You know, Dan, the drummer, you can't get any more solid. And Ben on guitar, he's flawless to both of them. And it just helps with Jeff Walker and Bill Steer. You could see the two veterans with these two young dudes holding their backs. And it's great. They're so good live. Like, that new album, which is now, I guess, a couple years old, but... Yeah. That album blew me away. I think it blew the metal world away, but it absolutely knocked my socks off. Just the production of it and the songwriting and Bill's, just his guitar playing and the phrasing on his solos. You know, you don't hear drummers talk much about, you know, but anything but drummers. But that album, man, Bill just blows me away with his songwriting and his guitar capabilities.
Well, yeah, the thing I like about Bill Steer is he was in Firebird, and I love Firebird. And here's a guy who's kind of got his name from like metal, but he's got this other side to him. And I think, and you're the same way, like a lot of these metal guys, whether the people who buy their albums or not know that most of the metal guys and the metal bands you know are rock and roll dudes too. Like, everybody loves Back in Black. Everybody. Yep. So that's why whenever I read on, of course, you shouldn't read social media, but I read like people's comments going like, rock and roll, what's this rock fucking blah, blah, blah. I'm like, don't you get it, dude? Like, all of us are into, and so I'm in a rock band. I'm into metal.
Right.
The same way all the metal dudes are into rock. Like,
that's right.
And so Bill's like someone I kind of like go, use an example, go see, he did Firebird, he's in Gentleman's Pistols, that's which right. is another amazing band, right. and he's in Carcass,
that's right,
like, so
and it's I think he was a founding member of Napalm Death. Someone can post and tell me that I'm wrong, but I think Bill was the original in the band, and which is just as amazing. And then of course, like you said, rock. You know, it's one of them things, man. Metal's metal. Metal came from rock. Rock is metal.
Yeah,
you can't deny that. You know, we all grew up before the word death metal.
Yeah.
Even became, I was playing drums at 7 years old, so I was listening to Queen and AC/DC and Leonard Skinner and Outlaws and ZZ Top. There was no, you know, then of course Black Sabbath entered our lives and Slayer, and you know, that was the end of it, of course, and both my feet were moving, and I just wanted to be Dave Lombardo, but it started with rock, man.
Yeah, that's the thing, hopefully, I always try to, like, you know, wave the flag and see, you know, but it's nice to know, like, people like Bill Steer do it as well, so.
Yeah.
And it just occurred to me that this tour you're on with all those bands, to me, when I think of death metal, I think of, like, the wave that happened in the early 90s, at least from my observation, is, like, I'm thinking 90, 91. It was Obituary, Carcass, Napalm, and Morbid Angel.
Right.
But those were the four bands that really signaled the wave of, like, kind of almost the death of thrash. Almost like there was just no more thrash metal after you guys came.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to see that all you guys are kind of bonded together into 2015.
Yeah.
I just realized that.
Yeah. Cause it is. It's just, again, it goes back to this tour and the lineup, how it came together and how everyone said yes and had their schedules ready for it. It is a dream lineup. We're lucky to be a part of it. We're fortunate to be, alive and healthy at this point, and so stoked that we actually were able to be doing it and on this tour and 25 shows into it. Usually after 5 weeks on the road, you know, you kind of get burned down, you get beat up, and you're ready for your pillow at home, and you're ready to go see the children and the wives and the friends. But on this tour, man, it's like I'm counting down when other band members are counting down, you know, 10 days till the to the flight home, I'm like, only 9 more shows to watch Carcass, and only 9 more that I'm going to have to get up and go watch some Voivod tonight, because I know it's going to be over soon.
They're playing tonight while we're playing.
Are they really?
Yeah, fuck. They're on 20 minutes, and then we go on. So it's I'm like, fuck.
I don't know how you're going to pull that off. You have to go see the first song with your guitar strapped on and just go running through the backstage. Yeah, get out of the way!
Yeah, pretty much. But that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
How is it touring with them? Because they would be, out of the four bands, not the odd band out, but just like I mentioned, you three came in the same wave. How is it with Voivod?
It's super cool, because again, if it was another really, really heavy metal, death metal, it wouldn't have made it as cool. Instead, they are a little bit different flavor to the Lollipop, and it makes it a cool, very cool evening, because, you know, there is Napalm, and there's blast beats flying, and Carcass, that drummer, is blast beating like crazy, and then, of course, the Cavemen come out in Obituary. We hold down some death metal, but you watch Away on the drum kit, and it's so fun to watch him, because it's different music, it's a different vibe, I don't know how to describe it. You just got to see Voivod, you know, to understand it, but it adds a little breath of fresh air, and maybe there's people saying, I wish it was a different band, but I see, in general, everyone's accepting it, especially the fans, because they are legends, man. Those are old school dudes, and they're throwing it down with their style. They're killer. They're killer live.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you something that's, because I'm a big Kiss fan, and I have to relate. There's something about you that's very Kiss-esque, because you are a drummer. And you are the real Catman.
Yeah.
You are the real Peter Criss Catman. Yeah. Can you tell me about that? Like,
yeah, you know, I just took it on because I where I live in Florida, and just like most of the southern hemisphere of this world, there's no real harsh winter times. So in Tampa, Florida, the winter never comes, so cats just breed and breed and breed. So the homeless cat population is a little bit is a real big problem. So I just learned, because I was tired of seeing cats getting run over and kittens dead in parking lots and just homeless cats digging out of garbage cans, I just learned what a process called trap, neuter, and return from the Humane Society in Tampa. And it's exactly what that means. You just, you know, cats live in colonies behind like a Taco Bell or behind an apartment complex. They don't go running around like a dog would. They stay in a colony. And so I just, in my little 1 square mile of my home, I just learned from just, okay, I see, you know, a little 3-4 cat colony. You go in there and you trap them, and you take them to Humane Society, and they get vaccinated, spay neutered, and they take a little tip off their left ear so you can see who's been done, and they get vaccinated. So they get it all done, and then you return them right where you, once they heal, you return them right where they were trapped. They live their lives. They can't keep breeding. It completely eliminates the process of breeding. And it's really just the humane way of just trying to stop the population problem in my area. I've been doing it for 11 years, my girlfriend and I. But then, of course, I'm a cat lover, and I'm an animal lover. So we have 25 colonies that we have done, maybe 180, 200 cats. And before I eat dinner every evening, I just go and I drop some food and fresh water for my colonies before I eat. And it turned into quite the adventure, and I'm passionate about it, so I make sure that they don't go hungry. I don't want them, you know, I don't want them getting shot and getting humans getting mad at them, so digging through garbage cans. So instead, I provide them with their, you know, a little bit of cat food and water every evening. And the most important thing and the reason that I do that, because on a daily basis, I just monitor, make sure no new ones are showing up, because, you know, one female that's pregnant, she's going to have babies, and a cat within 4 months old can be pregnant again. So you can just imagine a litter of 9 turns into 200 real fast. So long story short, you know, we simply learned, educated ourselves, and we just helped the population problem of homeless cats in my area. And it's just a constant little, you know, just make sure anyone, new ones that show up, you just snatch them up, TNR them, trap, neuter, return. And we've successfully done it for 11 years. And like the 25 colonies I take care of, there's no new ones. There's no more breeding. They're not populating more. They get to live their lives, and they're vaccinated. So
what do you mean by 25 colonies? What's that?
A cat will just live somewhere. A cat, like, whether you know it or not, in your neighborhood, if you stop behind, like, a pharmacy or a grocery store, if you wait long enough, you'll see there'll be a cat. That next day, if you go and you wait long enough, you're going to see that same cat. In fact, they live, they make colonies. They'll live in the same spot their entire life. A dog's a pack hunter. They'll run and they'll just kind of keep roaming. They'll just keep moving until they either get, like, you know, sadly, homeless dogs, they usually get hit by cars because they're just constantly just walking. Right. Cats don't. Cats just, they find a colony and they colonize. They'll literally live behind places and keep breeding if you allow them to. And that was what we learned real quick, just to step in. Because when you step in and you control a colony and you eliminate the breeding process, they all still live there. But new males that come in and realize all these women don't want me, they actually go and find another place to live. And it actually, like, in your neighborhood, if you take care of the population problem, it's amazing how much it helps the full population problem of the neighborhood, because there's, like, where I live, you know, 99% of the cats, they spay neutered, and we eliminated the breeding process of homeless animals, and we've cut it down quite a lot. And then, of course, the young ones, anytime we find a kitten, you know, a litter of kittens, if they're young enough, we snatch them up. I usually bring them into my bathroom and socialize them, make sure they're friendly enough, and then the Humane Society and two other rescue groups help me with adoptions, like a program for adopting.
Wow.
And that's another big thing. Any of the friendly ones that we can get off the streets, we want them off the streets. I don't put every cat. I don't just trap and throw them right back out. If they're friendly and they have a chance, then they're absolutely part of a program through the Humane Society or a couple different rescues that try and get them to find them homes. And especially the kittens, we snatch the kittens up and get them socialized and get them vaccinated. And we have really good success rate with getting kittens adopted out and into homes.
Well, when you say you have 25 colonies and you feed them every night, and because cats colonize and don't leave certain spots, do you travel around Tampa or something, like, every night or something?
It is 1 square mile. It's amazing, because I live near a huge university, and you know, the population of cats there, it's just there's a lot of them. So it's not like I'm driving all around Tampa.
Right.
It is literally just 1 square mile.
Right.
You know, it's very small, but yeah, it's 25 stops. You know, it's,
wow,
it is absolutely 25 spots. Some of them are only 3 cats that live, you know, literally behind, like, a Chick-fil-A or a Burger King, but they're always there. They deserve a little bit of food, and I don't want them digging in dumpsters and getting hurt. And but then I have some that are 18 cat colonies behind, like, you know, a big bowling alley or something, that I've got them all fixed, and they just live out in the woods, and they hear my truck come pulling in, and it's actually pretty amazing that they can hear my truck from, I can be of 2 football fields away, and I don't know if it's the noise of the tires or the engine. It's, and cars are always going back, but they know my truck. The minute I pull into the parking lot, you'll see, doop, boop, boop, bop. He's here. Woo! Get to eat tonight.
You are the cat man. You are the real cat man. That's amazing that,
yeah,
you play drums and you,
yeah, you know,
just...
And people that don't understand it, or people, some, you know, there's not animal, people are not all animal lovers. So there's a lot of people, especially that know how to voice their, you know, hide behind a computer and voice their disapproval of what I do. They think, oh, all you're doing is you're putting food out. You know what? If I'm not doing it, then all they're doing is breeding, and they're still going to be there. I didn't put them out there. I'm just trying to help the breeding stop. And
right.
So if you hate cats, then you should applaud me for what I do. If
right.
you love cats, then the next time you see me, give me a hug, because I'm down with helping animals. And if you don't understand that, then educate yourself, because we're not putting cats out. We're actually solving a problem with just cutting down the population problem.
Now, what happens when you're on the road for 5 weeks so far?
Wonderful question. And that's Heather. That's my girlfriend, who I've known her for going on 26 years, and we've been together for 17. Cat lovers, metalheads. And she's been holding down a full-time job for 25 years at the, you know, at where she works. So she has to take over. And I have 2 wonderful friends that help me as well, because it is a lot. You know, it's one thing for me to go out there and bust out and feed, but to have a full-time job like she does and not even getting off work till 7 to think she's going to go and conquer it on her own is near impossible. So just two angels that help us, two good friends of ours that help do some of the feeding, and Heather steps up and has to, really bust her ass while I'm gone. And that's why when we say, you're going out on a 5-week tour and, children, you missed children in that, I just know I'm the only band member without kids, except I also know that when I leave, it's a hell of a toll for her to hold down the fort and the gangs, and she does that very well.
Yeah. Wow. That's something that I really didn't. I wouldn't have guessed. I'm allergic to cats and dogs, so I always just wave to them.
That's great.
I used to go out with someone. She had two cats in an apartment, and it was I'd always walk out of there. The moment I leave her place, everything clears up. But while I was there, I would just be scratching. It's just how it is,
That's right. Yeah. And there's a lot of people allergic, and there's nothing you can do about it. People say, you take a pill, this and that, but there's nothing more miserable than when you're just all scratching up and your eyes are, you feel. I know I have animal. I have friends that try to come over and watch games. Like at my brother's house, who he has a couple dogs, and we had a studio cat there for a while. And friends that come over and try and hang at the studio, you see them immediately start itching and just scratching up, and their eyes they're sneezing the entire football game. And I get it. I don't know what I would do, because not only do I have homeless cats outside, I also have a zoo at home, because some of the special needs cats and the ones that were, some of the ones that were injured from humans, and like one of my mascot, Heather and I, we started, once we realized we're doing this and people keep asking, and we call it the Metal Meowlicia. And so people, on the obituary website, there's a part of it on the emails that just says help cats, and you can go read about what we do. Anyway, it's one of those things where special needs, the Metal Meowlicia, we always try to just educate people. And some of the cats that once you trap them and you realize, okay, one of them, I was feeding his whole family for years, and I came pulling up, and most of them were gone, and he was there, but his eye was hanging out. And I'm like, fuck, man. I didn't know what it was, so I snatched him up and brought him to the emergency vet, and he was shot. He was shot with a BB gun. So they did an X-ray before the surgery. They did an X-ray. He had 11 BBs. Someone just sat there and pop-shot at him multiple times, just again and again, and he lived. I don't know how and what makes people do something to an innocent animal. And then, of course, a few years later, the same thing. His brother, who still lived at that same gas station, we had to do a surgery on him as well, and he had 7 BBs in him as well. So it's just one of those things where not everyone's down with homeless animals, and then some people are just straight up evil, I guess, But I'm here just to simply say I'm not trying to change the world. I just wanted to help my community because I was tired of seeing how many homeless animals, and I just educated myself. How do I help the cats, man? And it was easy. It's not that hard. It's expensive, but it's a fun hobby.
how many do you only have cats as pets?
At my house, yeah. I mean,
how many cats do you have?
I'll plead the fifth on that one, but
okay. No, that's all good. That's
all good. No, we have a few, and it's usually special needs, whether it's a three-legged or one-eyed, the ones that that we can't put back outside, that we just simply said, you know what, and they're unadoptable. They're friendly with me because for years I fed them, but any other human, I have friends come over and they said, I thought you said you had a bunch of cats. I'm like, yeah, they just dove into the closet when they heard your car pull up.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. So, but it's good. I'm a cat guy.
Well, I've had friends who've adopted dogs who were abused and stuff, and they do behave a little differently than a regular dog, and
more loyal and a little bit more skittish, because if you were kicked and beaten when you were a puppy, things that you wonder what the hell happened, and it kind of sticks with you, and again, the cat thing, it's just I'm not going to put a one-eyed cat with 11 BBs in him back to that spot who people are shooting at, So instead we just said, you're going to hang with me. This is your house now. Enjoy it. Scratch my couch up as much as you want. That couch is there for you to, you know, enjoy life now. Apparently, life wasn't that much fun out there. So, and thank God most of our colonies, they're in safe spots. They're usually in the back of neighborhoods in the woods somewhere or behind a restaurant where there's at least some bushes and stuff that they can go find refuge and sleep away from traffic and stuff. And where I feed them, I try to keep it out of the way of, out of the sight of humans and out of the way of traffic and all that good stuff.
Wow. That's amazing, Donald. That's an amazing story. I would never have guessed that, but it's just amazing. I mean, I'm someone who, if you know anybody who knows me, knows that I'm really, really, if like the fact that you just said goodbye to your couch, that takes a lot for me.
Right.
I would just be like,
Yeah, you know, I guess if you own a zoo, you better be prepared for some barf on the floor every now and then. And that's the way it is, yeah, you know. It's just like when you have children, you know. Do you know the first thing you're going to sacrifice as a father with an infant is my sleep. I know for a fact I am no longer going to sleep like I did before the baby entered the house. And I know that because there are 11 children in this band. I'm an uncle of many. And so I saw my brothers and my sister go through that, and especially with John. He has two wonderful children, but we lived together forever until he was married and the first baby showed up, and I was like, okay, I guess I got to go move out because this is crazy. Infants, I'll do cat barf on the floor and clean that up long before infants and crying.
Were you doing midnight diaper change duty too?
I was not. I'm a great uncle, but I'm not midnight diaper change guy. You know?
Right. Oh, that's great.
Well, Donald, man, I'm gonna say have a good show tonight at Speed Fest. I'm gonna catch you guys. It's gonna be awesome. And I really want to end the podcast with Beth. I should end with an obituary track.
And here is the second half with Donald Tardy when I called him up on Skype to ask him about the first annual Florida Metal Festival happening January 30th of this year, 2016, at the Cuban Club in Tampa, Florida. So, Donald, how was the tour? You're back home. How was it?
It was amazing. It was long. My God, I saw you while we were over there, but I think it was 34 shows in 6 weeks.
Well, you're home now, and I was very surprised. And then started seeing it on your Twitter, the obituary Twitter. Very surprised that we did a podcast and we never talked about the Florida Metal Fest that's happening next month, January 30th, 2016. You and your brother John are instrumental. You are the founders of this festival.
That is correct, and I could not be any more excited about it. I have been wanting to do a festival for the Tampa Bay area for a long time. Florida people deserve it. We just have never had the means of putting it together, the money to actually try and make it happen, and the scheduling with bands is always a nightmare, as you know. So even though we always asked other Florida bands, would you want to do a show together, us and Deicide, and we always said it would be fun, but it never worked out. And finally we pulled the trigger, and we not only confirmed some amazing Florida bands, we also brought in some big dogs and added a little bit of flavor, bringing in Corrosion of Conformity and bringing in Trouble.
Trouble.
Which is amazing because, again, this is a Florida metal festival for Florida people. So it doesn't necessarily mean it needs to be all Florida bands. And we were very, very deliberate on some of the bands we brought in, so it wasn't just straight up death metal. And that was very important for myself.
I noticed the Corrosion of Conformity, the Trouble, the Madball. They're all in there. It kind of rounds out the festival. But what struck me is, you guys, how did you guys go on this massive tour and knowing you had to organize this festival? Were you guys on the phone all day long before soundcheck?
Yeah, we were, you know, and thank God for social networking and the internet and being able to communicate through WhatsApp and Skype and that is exactly how we still kept the ball rolling with organizing the festival. We confirmed a lot of these bands a long time ago, so some of the legwork was already done. But yes, like you said, we were in Europe and still keeping our fingers crossed and scratching our heads and pulling our hair out, trying to confirm some of the bands that made it very important for us. And Trouble and COC were a huge part of that for us. to simply make this a wonderful festival. And we pulled it off, and we were in the middle of touring and being on the bus and trying to find Wi-Fis backstage. And we still kept it going. And now that we're home, we hit the ground running full blast. And now we are confirming all the technical riders and the venue and the PA and the staging. And on that note, I could not tell people that are thinking of maybe coming to this festival the amount of effort and money we spent to make sure it is a world-class venue and stage and PA light system for the fans that decide to show up for the first year, because the Cuban Club down there in Ybor City in Tampa is a phenomenal venue. It's got two stages. The main stage is an outdoor open-air festival like our European festivals, 4,500 people capacity, and a huge 40-foot by 60-foot stage. Just again, just like the European people get to watch Obituary, and the Florida fans and friends of mine always go, God, man, I can't believe you get to go play big stages and I never get to see it. So we are super excited to know that we are bringing in world-class PA system to knock people's socks off.
And that's the thing about holding a festival in America, in North America. A lot of times some of the organizers don't have the experience of going through the rigmarole of a European festival and just how they've got it so down. And you guys, obviously, you know how it is over there in Europe. They've got the festival circuit so down. Now you can take all that experience and bring it to Tampa.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it is. It is about experience. It's knowing that you could do it. You could do it halfway, and you could set up somewhat of a stage and make people build the drums in between a 20-minute set change and grabbing one drum set off the kit, off the drum riser, and throwing another one up there. But, right. You know, we went the extra mile, we went the extra effort, and we spent the extra money to make sure that the stage is big enough with a wing on the side of the stage that there will be two rolling risers. And I know that really means nothing to fans because they're here to see music and they don't care how the drummer gets his drum kit up. But for the bands, because I respect these bands so much, I want it to be an experience that they're never going to forget. We took the time to make sure that it is a smooth main stage and smooth just organization of how this is going to play out. Because again, I've been to festivals that the fans are there. It is absolutely packed, and it was an amazing time for the fans. But it was a complete nightmare for myself as a drummer, knowing I had 20 minutes to get my drum set up on a drum riser, when the drummer in front of me took 11 of those minutes just to get his drums and beer cans off the riser before I started. So this was very important for me and my brother. And again, maybe the fans don't even understand or care about that aspect, but it is from the experience that we've had over the last 20 years that we wanted to make it smooth running, which makes it fun for the band members. And that's very important for myself and my brother.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, people don't realize is when I notice when a festival has like a backstage that's really taken care of, they take care of the bands, the catering's nice, the rooms are nice. And then finally, by the end of the day, you find out, oh, the organizer used to be in a band.
Yeah.
And yeah, they know.
And it is our first attempt. There are going to be speed bumps. There's going to be something that comes up and slaps us in the face. And we say, next year we know. Now we know that this and the transport or the hotel or the bands and the scheduling, something's going to happen. But again, we rely on our experience of just simply being a band that lands in a certain country or in a certain town. And you have those first obvious questions as band members. And the first thing that comes out of band members' minds when they see the person picking them up is, how far is the hotel? And then it's usually an answer. And,
yeah.
And what time is my stage time? And what time is dinner? And just all that stuff that my brother and myself really took the time to just make sure that it makes sense for the band members that are landing in Florida, to make sure that it's a fun experience, not to mention for the fans, because we are going to blow them away with the PA system that we put the deposit down on and that we have for this venue.
Wow, that must have been, going back to the tour that you guys just finished, that must have been hellish when there's like 35 guys trying to load up on the same internet line and you and your brother are trying to just send an email and some guy wants to watch a YouTube clip of, you know, a horse jumping over a cat or something.
You know, and now, my God, technology now, even though it's only 35 dudes, they don't only have one device. Everyone's breaking out laptops and their phones. So you got 66 different devices on the Wi-Fi immediately. So you learn tactics. Like I would go to bed earlier than I wanted, just to get up earlier than I needed to get in there and make sure my phone connects to the Wi-Fi. Because sometimes, you know how those Wi-Fis in some of those countries, it only allows a certain amount of users. Then all of a sudden it just starts bumping people off.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, it wasn't just about, oh, I want Wi-Fi today to stream a horse jumping over a cat. It's like, oh my God, I have to make a phone call today. If I don't get on, I don't know what I'm going to do besides just make a phone call at $10 a second because I have to confirm something here. And it made it challenging. But again, thank God for the internet and venues that bring in Wi-Fi and just the whole idea that we can communicate without having to dial phone numbers nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea this was happening. You guys were doing this when I met up with you guys at Speedfest.
I know. I don't know how you and I didn't talk about it, because Lord knows the minute that I left you, I was like, I didn't even bring up Florida Metal Fest. I'm sitting there talking about cats and my colonies and helping out homeless, and I totally forgot about discussing and talking about something I could not be more excited about.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, having been to Tampa a few times now, I mean, over the years, I know that Tampa has a great nightlife scene, a lot of great clubs. I've seen it. I mean, the nightlife there is pretty happening.
Yeah. And again, there are certain parts of Central Florida and in parts of Tampa that we could have picked venues that maybe might have saved us money as the organizers. But again, we were very keen on making sure that this is an experience for everybody that is going to be amazing. And Ybor City brings that, because the venue is down there and it is in the center and the heart of just Ybor City, which is full of nightlife, clubs, restaurants, 3 hotel rooms that are within walking distance of the festival. And that's a lot. That means a lot for, again, as the organizer of a festival, bringing in the bands and not having to shuttle people for 40 minute rides just to get to their stage time. That's huge for band members and for the fans. I mean, fans can land here at Tampa International Airport and it is less than a 15 minute cab ride away. It's 10 minutes if there's no traffic and you're already at our festival, and then the hotels are within walking distance. And we allowed, again, spending a little bit more money on more bodies there for security and for the ticket takers. We decided to make it an event where you can come and go. You can go watch a couple bands, because Ybor City has so many cool restaurants and stuff. We wanted people that came from out of state to not be trapped in the Cuban Club. We wanted them to go and have a beer down there at the World of Beer or at the Spaghetti Factory. There's a lot of cool restaurants. So we said, you know what, it's going to actually take a few more dollars, but we want people to, if they want to go out, grab a wristband and then go out, enjoy a little bit of 7th Ave and 8th Avenue, and then come back and see what favorite bands they're waiting to see. And again, we didn't have to do that, but we want this just to be kind of a cool experience for the people that want to come to the Florida Metal Fest.
And this is going to be, obviously, you've hinted at it already, hopefully, a yearly thing?
That's right. You know, fingers crossed that we pulled this first year off, because from what we have learned and what we have asked and the suggestions and the comments from people that organize festivals, the first year, if you break even, you do backflips knowing that you might be able to possibly do a second year. And that's exactly what we're hoping for. We know that people are excited and they like the idea of a festival, but it's sometimes hard to get them to commit and actually come out and spend money to come to the festival for the first year. So we are doing our best at promoting it and making sure that people realize that, you know what, we didn't just do a half-assed job. We're doing our best to make sure that the people that do show up are going to have a great experience, and hopefully that carries over to next year and brings more people from not only in Florida but just around the United States and in Europe, because again, Tampa's it's the perfect place to come in January when it's usually freezing everywhere else. It's normally beautiful weather in January in Florida.
And you obviously want to set yourself up for a reputation that, you know, there's been other festivals in the past that have, like, you know, growing up as a metal kid, I would always hear about the Milwaukee Death Fest. And I think Florida Metal Fest is, you obviously want to set yourself up to that status. Is that what you're aiming for?
That is what we're aiming for. Because I am from Tampa. This is my town. I've been here 30 years. I love this town. I love the people, and they deserve an amazing festival. On the other hand, I know that festival organization is not always it's not a great business to be in. Sometimes and some years you're going to probably lose your ass, but it is what it is. We're going to cross that ground when we get there. The first year, all we simply said was, let's bring in what bands we know are going to kick ass and that are good friends of ours to make this a monumental and a historic event for us. Because again, it's not just bringing in any bands. All these bands have connections with Obituary, or simply Obituary are huge fans of the bands that we invited for this first year.
Right, right. And that's another thing about being from Tampa, Florida. Florida death metal is worldwide, world known. It's kind of like other cities in like Gothenburg and San Francisco, obviously. Yep. New York City. But Tampa, you know, it holds its ground in the history of metal as being, you know, an epicenter for influence in the genre. So yeah, it makes sense. You guys hold the cards.
Yeah.
You know, being from Florida.
Yeah. And it does, you know, this is where this is where death metal was created. Chuck Schuldiner, from the band Death, was one of the first, and I call him what was the godfather, because there was metal music and there was heavy stuff going on, but in Florida, Chuck did something and it changed the world, and we didn't know it at the time, but we were right behind him and we were rooting each other on. And people wonder, was there a big competition and was there bitter feelings or anything? We were all in the crowds at each other's show,
right,
and rooting each other on. So it was an amazing thing. But yes, it did start. It did start with Death and Obituary and Morbid Angel and Deicide. And so it was about what happened with death metal in the early 80s and into the 90s. And we wanted to make sure that it wasn't just about death metal, though, because there's a lot of metal out there. And I'm speaking for my entire band. We are not death metal listeners, only death metal listeners. We love death metal, and we have been doing this for 30 years, but we love music. So that's why we brought in Madball. We brought in COC and we brought in Trouble, because it's about metal. It's not about death metal. We're definitely giving the fans a great taste of some Florida death metal at this first year, but it is about music, and we wanted it to be a festival that people that don't necessarily enjoy that much death metal, at least they can get excited about some of the big dogs that we invited and accepted and are confirmed to come to this festival.
Well, that's awesome, Donald. I wish you and John the best of luck with the festival next month. And I just want to say, I've emailed you this, but now that I have you on the podcast after Speedfest, I just want to go on the record and say, you guys crushed Speedfest. Your set was so pounding heavy.
It
was incredible,
man.
And we all talked about your set at the end of the night.
Awesome.
And so it was amazing.
I really appreciate that, dude. And coming from you, I know that's heartfelt, because I know you are an Obituary fan. And I thank you very much for that, because I've known you now for many, many years. And that definitely puts goosebumps on my makes the hair on my neck raise, and gets me excited about the future.
Oh, that's awesome. And say hi to John and say hi to Ken for me. And
I certainly will.
Happy holidays, dude.
Absolutely. Happy holidays. And I hope everyone's ready for some sunshine January 30th at the Florida Metal Fest.
I think you guys have positioned the date of the festival very strategically, because there's people who will be sick of the cold and who want to just escape.
That's right. And that's why we pray, we keep our fingers crossed, our toes crossed, whatever we can cross, that this will be an annual event, because people that want to get away from the cold, now they have a reason to.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, Donald. Thank you, man.
Thank you. Thank you, Danko.